I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, the next big thing, it's Granny Ball, and we will tell you what that is. But first, I'm going to continue my conversation about the case of Megan Williams, the 20-year-old African-American woman who was allegedly held captive and tortured by six whites in West Virginia. She came to Washington this week to meet with Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee, a Democrat and a member of the Congressional Black Caucus. She also attended a fundraiser to help her cover her medical expenses. We attempted to reach Brian Abraham, the Logan County, West Virginia prosecutor in the case, but we were unsuccessful. I'm joined now by Congresswoman Lee, as well as Malik Shabazz. He is the Williams family's legal advisor. He's here with me in the studio. Welcome. Thank you both so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Malik Shabazz, first of all, how is Megan Williams doing mentally and physically?
Megan Williams is still, of course, challenged in this hour. She is boosted in a way by the support and the love that she is receiving, but it will take her many, many years to recover from this traumatic ordeal, and we're doing the best we can to help her.
Why does she need money for medical expenses?
Because there's not a lot of resources available in this hour. And I want to be clear that the funds that Black Lawyers for Justice has raised for Megan has not just been for medical expenses, although we're helping to get her counseling.
Black Lawyers for Justice is an organization you founded.
Absolutely.
And you lead. Yeah.
Absolutely. We just wanted to make a caring effort for our sister by being able to provide some funds for food, clothing, and shelter, because, you know, our people in West Virginia are poor.
And if, just briefly before I get to the congressman, Mrs. Williams, Megan's mother, was very outspoken at first, but we've heard very little of her lately. Can you shed some light on that? Has she felt a need to withdraw from public discussion or attention?
There's a lot of pressure. That's why I'm here for. I'm here as an advocate and a spokesperson. There's a lot of pressure in West Virginia, unfair pressure, I believe, on the family and for Megan, and to keep the case out of the spotlight and to keep national attention away from this case. And we are here to ensure that the national spotlight and our national representatives, such as our Honorable Congresswoman and also Reverend Sharpton and I, will be in Charleston Tuesday rallying on her behalf. November 3rd, we held a national march in West Virginia because we have a duty to keep a national spotlight and national and international eye on this most horrific hate crime. There's pressure, you know, being applied in West Virginia, even pressure from the prosecutor to make everybody be quiet and everybody sit down. But we know as a people, with our history, we cannot afford
but
to let that
happen. But
it's
been reported that his concern is twofold. One is that he's concerned that public statements may jeopardize the case, because what really matters is what happens in the courtroom.
That's in terms of Megan
Number
Williams
mm-hmm.
giving interviews, mm-hmm. and that's fine. But no prosecutor, no authorities in that state should say that someone should not have a support rally for Megan Williams, that somebody, that the community and a congresswoman should not be able to intervene on her behalf and ask the critical questions of why haven't federal hate crimes or federal charges been charged in this case? Why has the U.S. Justice Department failed? Why has the state failed to prosecute what is obviously a hate crime and failed to fulfill what's even in the legislative intent in that state?
Well, let's ask the congresswoman about that. Congresswoman, first of all, how was your meeting with Ms. Williams? How did that go?
Well, certainly it was full of emotion. It was eye-opening. It was affirming that she had such a wide range of support. Counselors, advisors came, her mother, who truly loves her daughter and is deeply concerned about what her daughter has gone through and the lifelong scars that this young woman will experience.
Congresswoman, do you feel that federal involvement is warranted here? It does appear that the local authorities are taking this seriously.
Absolutely. In fact, I serve as a member of the House Judiciary Committee, Subcommittee on Crime, as well as a member of the Human Rights Caucus. We go around the world to address the question of enormous human abuses that we see in the continent and other places. It is interesting that we go around the world as Americans to denounce that kind of violence and hatefulness, and yet we cannot find, if you will, the right kind of legal address of these issues right here in our country.
But how do you know that, since the case hasn't gone forward yet?
Well,
I guess what I'm just asking is, why do you feel that the federal involvement is warranted? I think usually people call for federal involvement when they feel that the local authorities aren't doing their job on matters of, because these are, you know, assault, murder, those kinds of crimes are generally considered state crimes in this, under this country's system. So why do you feel the federal, extra federal involvement is needed here?
Well, thank you for the question. It is very clear why federal involvement needs to be engaged. As I read the West Virginia hate crime statute, it is clearly a hate crimes act that occurred. And the district attorney in this instance, as the district attorney in Jena, Louisiana, local jurisdictions, state jurisdictions, refused to forward on the hate crimes indictment, and frankly are making the decision of being the prosecutor and the grand jury at the same time. What the prosecutor can do is submit all the facts to the grand jury, along with kidnapping charges, assault charges, and other charges. Let the grand jury be the decision maker, not this prosecutor. If he is fearful of poisoning the jury pool because people are using their First Amendment rights, then he can ask for a venue change himself. Or he can ask for the state's attorney of West Virginia to participate. Or he can ask himself for the U.S. attorney to act. Or he can ask the Department of Justice to act. He's done none of those, and he is required of the legal counsel, Mr. Chavez, who I applaud greatly for his involvement, and he's asked the members of the community to stand down, to be silent, and not to engage the federal government, of which I intend to do, along with my colleague, Congressman Al Wynn, to send letters to press forward in the Justice Department, because it is a place where you are to go when you feel your rights have been have not been completely addressed and that you feel your civil rights have been violated.
Well, Shabazz, can I just ask you this question that the reporter from the Charleston Gazette raised? He said that his understanding is that the prosecutors was reluctant because the hate crime law is untested, number one, the state hate crime statute is untested, and number two, that he's already seeking charges with more severe penalties than would be commanded by the hate crime statute. What's your response to that?
It's a constant train of excuses of why they won't fulfill the legislative intent of the legislator of West Virginia on why they enacted the hate crime statute. It does not take away from kidnapping, from sexual assault, from the malicious wounding and the battery charges if a hate crime charge is added.
But why does that serve Megan Williams' interests?
Well, it serves her interests because if, for example, all of those charges, a judge may come up with, say, a 20-year conviction for one of the defendants with for the penalty for any of those charges that are charged or convicted, then those 10 years would matter because that defendant would then serve 30 instead of 20. Also, we here, and I'm sure the Congresswoman understands, there are larger public policy considerations here. Hate crimes are especially heinous. They have a particularly nasty effect on our history and future relations in this country. And this case is about Megan Williams, but it's bigger. We're here to say it, make a call that there has to be a national and international effort to stop the hate crimes and the hate crime acts of intimidation against our people. And it must start with this obvious hate crime of Megan Williams. If this is not a hate crime that has occurred against Megan Williams, then we don't know what is. So I don't see what the problem is.
Congresswoman, final question to you. What further role do you think you will play in this and also other members of the interested members of Congress?
Well, certainly I'm going to bring this to the attention of other members of Congress, other members of the House Judiciary Committee, our Chairman John Conyers, who's been enormously effective on these issues of abuse of one's civil rights. But I'm going to ask the Attorney General to assess this case and indicate and give us a reason why the U.S. attorney cannot be involved. The West Virginia hate statute is very, very clear. I think it's a good statute. It's broad enough to cover the issues of sex and race and ethnicity. And I don't feel that the prosecution will be hampered by pressing forward that charge. If not, I would ask the U.S. attorney to engage and collaborate with the local authorities and bring federal hate crimes charges
on
this question.
Well, thank you. We're going to have to leave it there. Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee joined us from Capitol Hill. Megan Williams is legal advisor and advisor to the family. He's also the founder of Black Lawyers for Justice. Malik Shabazz joined us here in our studios in Washington. Congresswoman and Attorney Shabazz, thank you both so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Michelle.
Thank you for having us.